We've all heard the phrase, you can't pour from an empty cup. But the reality for many fundraisers is a constant cycle of burnout and exhaustion. With so many things demanding your time and attention, how do you remain present when there's so much to do? In today's episode, I'm taking over the podcast and talking to two special guests about how to be present, create boundaries, and take care of yourself.
Welcome to the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group, featuring Richard Perry and Jeff Schreifels. Twice a month, we bring you the latest and best thinking about major gift fundraising, so you can develop authentic relationships with your major donors. Here are your hosts, Richard and Jeff.
Welcome to the podcast today. I'm Karen Kendrick, Senior Director of Learning at Veritas Group, and I'm doing a bit of a podcast takeover today. In today's episode, I'll be interviewing two amazing individuals who are experts in emotional intelligence, positive thinking, and addressing the root causes of burnout and overwhelm. Before we get started, let me give each of our guests a brief introduction. Janice Cooper is a coach and learning development facilitator. She guides individuals, leaders, and teams in ways that offer new insights into themselves and others, so they may build more effective and influential relationships. Janice uses a variety of tools, assessments, programs, and practices that build self-awareness and help shift negative thoughts and behaviors to ones that produce positive thoughts and outcomes where personal and business success is generated. Janice operates Janice Cooper Consulting and also provides leadership, staff development, and well-being programs to Best Friends Animal Society. And our other guest today is Wes Avance. Building on his background in psychology and leadership development, Wes helps individuals increase their practice of being calm, curious, confident, and clear in order to cultivate meaningful connection and trust with others. Over the course of his career, Wes has come to believe that self-awareness, self-compassion, and moral courage are keys to unlocking the fullest expression of one's effectiveness and personal satisfaction. Wes and his wife, Cindy, live in the Woodlands, Texas, where they enjoy cycling, painting, movies, yoga, and sharing coffee on their back porch. They have two grown children and are proud grandparents. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
That's great.
Awesome. Now, to kick things off, I want to ask you both a question. And Janice, you can jump in first with your answer. In a recent poll, we asked our Veritas community of fundraisers and fundraising leaders to rate their interest in hearing about a number of self-care topics, and the two top choices were burnout and boundaries. Why do you think those two items were the top rated request?
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised because I see and hear that a lot within groups that I work with too. And I think maybe COVID has probably sent it over the top for a lot of people. But even before that, we were dealing with that. And I think for me, one of the reasons why we see so much burnout, for one, is that we have a really difficult time being present. So when we're present, we are in the here and the now. When we're not in the present, we're worried about what's happened in the past. We're worried about what's happening in the future. And that causes a lot of stress for us. And when we continue to do that, sort of live in our head and worry about all these things and try to keep up with everything, then that's the burnout. And then we also fail to set good boundaries. So becoming present is really around being in the here and the now, doing one thing at a time and giving that our full attention. Getting out of our head, out of that past and the future that I talked about, and really present with our body, our thoughts, and our emotions, whether we're sitting in a room, we're in a situation, or we're talking with another person.
Yeah. And I think you're spot on with that, Janice. And I would simply add that the business climate today really pushes us away from being fully present. Expectations to be more productive every year, more productive, really make our lives be one that is marked by hurry, where we're moving as quickly as possible through our list of things to do, trying to increase our productivity, both personally and professionally. And a lot like a train that's moving fast and the scenery is a blurry, just a blur going by. our relationships get shallow, our ability to be present is diminished, and as a result, you know, we just don't have that energy from connection. And obviously, not to even refer to the impact that the pandemic has had on us, there's a, I'm hearing people talk about the COVID hangover. And there was a survey by Mercer in late 2020 of 270 insurance companies, health insurance companies, saying, you know, what is the greatest risk to health? And they do that survey regularly. But this year, for the first time, is that mental health was placed as a higher risk than smoking, at the very top of the risk list. And so if you add the pressure to be productive on top of the COVID impact that we've had that has depersonalized and decreased our sense of accomplishment and exhausted us all emotionally, what a challenge to be present. It's not surprising.
Thank you, Wes. You mentioned like it's like being like a train. Talk a little bit about, you talk about embracing rhythms and cycles and seasons. What do you mean by that?
You know, I think many of us feel like we're made to behave like machines. We sit up in bed in the morning and put our feet on the ground and expect ourselves to be going at 100% from that first step. And our day is really marked by seeing how quickly we can move from item to item on our to-do list to get as many checked off as possible until the last thing in the day, as we're pulling our feet up off the floor and getting into bed, we're thinking about what we got accomplished, and we're realizing our list is actually longer than it was when we started the day. And it's extremely frustrating, and it makes us just want to move faster instead of realizing that as human beings, as a part of the natural world, we are not meant to put our accelerator on the floor and go like that all day long, every day of our lives, even on our days off when we're trying to accomplish so much, but rather just to lean into the natural rhythms and cycles and seasons of the natural world. I consider rhythms, you know, the small events during the day, like a moment to stop and breathe, cycles more like what happens in a week or over the course of a full day. Where am I taking a day off or a weekend off? And the seasons are more like, well, you know, we're in the fourth quarter. It's a season where there's a lot expected in a lot of professions, and certainly donor expectations are really high right now to produce. And so this is a season where we have to acknowledge there's a lot of expectations with the holidays. And so what will I plan to do after this season in the first quarter to make that different? What will I choose to release so that I can slow down and have more of a life if I can't do that right now? So those are how I would describe that.
But Wes, I have so much to do. I have all this list, and you know, I get caught up in feeling like I need to get through the list, or I'm not a good person. I'm not doing my job right. I'm not being successful. Someone's going to find out that I'm really not doing a good job. There's so much happening around getting that stuff done and being that machine that goes in fifth gear all day long.
So what there is really challenging is the fact that we have to change the way we see ourselves, change our level of self-compassion. I honestly think that a lot of us are so others oriented that our lives are really marked. What we see our value in what we do for others and give to others. Certainly that's not bad unless it doesn't include ourselves. And when we neglect ourselves consistently, there's a terrible price to pay for that. It's the gift that I'm able to give is greatly diminished, and the length of time I'll be able to give that gift is greatly shortened as I just become exhausted. And, you know, I think the way out of that is I have to begin to realize that I have to have self-compassion before I can really be compassionate for others. And I have to be willing to accept the trade-offs. I'm willing not to do some things so that I can do a few things that really matter much better. I'll have a much greater impact. I'll be much more effective. And the joy that I get, the sense of satisfaction in what I do will raise, and that will give me more energy. And so then the quality of my, of what I give to others goes up. So there is some reframing that has to go on with, in order for me to make that transition.
I think, you know, if I can just tap into what Wes was saying, I echo what he was saying around like this, you know, we set expectations for ourselves. I'm paraphrasing here, but there's so much self-judgment that we do. Like, I can't do this. I can't do that. I haven't gotten that donor on board yet. We waste so much energy beating ourselves up. And we don't give ourselves the compassion that we would to somebody else. And when we are beating ourselves up, and everybody does it, and it's a hard habit to break, because a lot of the times we don't even realize that we're doing it, right? And so we get to choose whether we're willing to be compassionate to ourselves, whether we're willing to accept our imperfections, because we are all imperfect, and that's okay. And we can gain much more energy, much more enthusiasm, much more positivity when we can begin to allow ourselves that forgiveness, that compassion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We would never talk to someone that we love or a best friend the way that we talk to ourselves, the shaming and the blaming that we put on ourselves. We would never do that to somebody that we care about. And we do it to ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
Why do you think we do it to ourselves? Is that, that's what we think we have to do to motivate ourselves, or where does that come from?
Well, in my book, I'm a positive intelligence coach. And, you know, the premise of that program is that we have saboteurs, and the saboteurs, including one called the judge, which is the master saboteur, they are behind all of our angst, our worry, our anger, our resentment, our unhappiness. And we've used them, and we've kind of built them over time from childhood based upon the experiences that we've had. It's in many ways survival, depending upon our childhood environment that we grew up in. And yet those stick with us as adults, and they don't really serve us. So another example besides the judge is the hyperachiever, who might believe that, you know, this high level of getting things done and always working and everything gets them success. But in the long run, it also wears them down. It hurts relationships. It causes people to show up in a way that is all about them versus other people, and they never settle on what they've just accomplished and let it set in. They're often running to the next thing, and then there's always the next thing and the next thing. So there's a lack of happiness that those saboteurs cause, and yet there's lies that those saboteurs tell us to make us think that we need them.
Yeah. And I would add to that, the culture that we live in today, especially the business culture, but the social culture as well. You know, when I was very young, and I don't want to give away my age, but there was a day when I felt like I was competing in life with those in my small community. I could see them. I would see them at meetings. I'd see them on the street. And as long as I was doing fairly well compared to those people, in terms of business or social, then I could feel a sense of satisfaction and belonging. Today, we are competing against millions and millions of people that we see online, and the businesses that are all competing with each other, no matter where we are in the world. And I think that is so intrinsically intimidating that we feel like we have to be much better than we can possibly be. And it drives us crazy trying to outperform ourselves in a very unrealistic fashion.
So Wes, I believe I treat myself like I'm a machine. Talk a little bit more about that.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with speed, but machines are built to put out, with very little put in other than plugging them in the wall. And the natural world, there's always this taking in and giving out balance. And so for us, because our threats are more abstract, our challenges are more abstract, what's going on in our head, we don't often have this emotional or psychological balance. We are focused on giving in order to be okay and meet expectations. But while we realize, okay, I can't go without eating and sleeping and exercise is good, often we don't even tend to our mind. We don't try to do good things. Things like discovery. Discovery is a joy-filled experience. We all love to make new discoveries, have new insights. But when we're so focused on giving out, we can't relax and explore in a creative way like a child would do. We can't really play with things. We can't really just enjoy making time to have affection or laughter or to do creative expression, whether, you know, even something that doesn't have a point to it, just something that's artistic or enjoyable. So I think that's the difference in what I'm talking about. Those things that would be good for our spirit as well as our body, we don't make a priority because we don't think we need them. If we really believe we need them, we would make time to do that.
So Janice, you started out speaking to presence, right? Talk a little bit more about what is presence. We've heard about presence. We've probably met some people that have amazing presence in our experience, but break that down a little bit for us.
Yeah, so again, presence is really being in the here and the now. It's taking yourself out of what's happened in the past, what might happen in the future, which causes a lot of anxiety for most of us, or a lot of resentment and everything. And the benefit of presence is only one thing, one person, one situation gets our attention at a time. And as Wes said, oftentimes we're like these machines and we're trying to do it all. And we've got a lot of balls that we're juggling up in the air.
And so being right present, now, Janice, I'm a fundraiser.
Yeah.
It's the fourth quarter. I've got all these donors to reach out to. I feel like a machine right now. So give me an example, make it real for me. What would presence be in a day like today?
Well, especially for fundraisers, because they feel so much pressure. I mean, in their head, they're saying, oh my gosh, I've only got 5 more weeks left. I'm not going to be able to make the numbers. How many people do I have to dial? How much time do I have to spend? What happens if I can't do that? So again, going back to the point I made earlier, we spend a lot of energy when we're in that place, when we're present and bringing our attention to each call that we have with a donor, let's say. We actually have better access to our brain and we have a more heightened sensory awareness. So we actually can think better, we experience things in different ways, there's more connectedness. So if you've ever had a conversation with somebody and you can just tell that they're not there, it doesn't feel very good, right? The conversation can sometimes come to an end. And if we're doing that with our donors, then we're gonna miss out on some cues, whether it's body language, if we happen to be meeting with them in person or by video. You know, if we're thinking about what it is we want to say next or the point that we want to drive home, and that donor happens to mention something, if you're present, you can be really curious about that and say, well, tell me more. But if you're worried about what you're going to say next or the next donor that you've got to call, you're not going to pick up on the nuances of that donor and some of the cues when you're not present. So there's a lot that we can do to sort of bring ourselves into having those discussions one at a time and being all there. And the other fascinating thing is that the donor is going to pick up on that. You know, they're going to know when they have you there because you're going to follow up. You're going to ask questions. You're going to probe at them. You're going to be curious. That's when they know that they're connected with you, because they can sense that you're listening, that you're fully there.
Yeah, I can relate. You can always tell when someone's like reading an email when they're talking to you on the phone. I mean, you can tell when someone's really present, even just how it feels is kind of interesting, isn't it?
So what you're saying is, I remember years ago, my son called me on the phone and I was in the middle of doing something and he said, "You're not really listening to me. You're typing, aren't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, caught." Red-handed, guilty. And it didn't feel very good. Doesn't feel good. And nor was I really attentive to what he was saying to me.
So Janice, you know, you've talked about this presence and I'm hearing the benefits. Talk a little bit about why it's so hard to be in that space on a regular basis.
Well, it has so much to do with how we're wired as humans, Karen. And I know with Wes's background in psychology, I'm sure he can jump in and add to this, but essentially we're wired for survival. And so that means that we're predispositioned for fear. So the way our nervous system works is there's an autonomic nervous system, and there's two parts of it. There's a sympathetic, number one, which is like a security system, and it's monitoring our environment and our thoughts. And it's actually preparing us like fight or flight, much like the cavemen did, our forefathers. And when we perceive something as dangerous, our body starts to prepare us to physically fight or take flight. So our pupils dilate, our heartbeat increases, our muscles tense up, and our adrenaline starts flowing. But at the same time, our cognitive abilities start shrinking because all of our resources are going to our body. So have you ever been prepared for an argument with your loved one and you've got it all laid out? I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that, there was this case, so there was that case. And then you're in the middle of a heated argument and you forget all of that, right? And then afterwards you're like, why did I forget all of that? Well, that's because you're in this sort of state of defensiveness and fear, and your cognitive abilities have shut down because you're preparing for a fight. Your body's ready for that. Okay. So that's one way. And then the other part of the nervous system is the parasympathetic. And that's responsible for our rest and digest. It prevents our body from being overworked and it helps to restore the body to a calm state. So the pupils then contract, the heartbeat reduces, the muscles relax, our digestive system increases. So they work polar opposites pretty much. We don't spend enough time in the parasympathetic part because we're in this fear mode. Like Wes mentioned earlier, a lot of our fears are social. We're worried about, is that donor going to pay attention to me? Am I going to make my numbers? Am I going to be socially accepted? Am I going to get the likes on Facebook or Instagram? So there's all the social pressure we put on ourselves that keeps us from being present and puts us in that fear mode.
Yeah. And I would add to that the speed element that I keep referring to. Mm-hmm. I think that exacerbates it because as those hormones are released to help us, you know, gear up and deal with the challenge of the moment, even if it's a positive thing, like a phone call that I've got, an important phone call, and it's going real well, and I'm just really excited about it. There's still so many hormones that are being released that are ramping me up. And yet what you're describing is for me to feel fully present means that I need to find my way back down to a calmer place where I can really focus on them, not the hormones coursing through my veins. What I have found is that a real problem for me is scheduling calls or meetings or appointments just back to back with no space between them. And I think we commonly do that in business. We schedule hour-long or 30-minute appointments. We never schedule 50-minute appointments or 25-minute appointments. We do it at the top of the hour. There's no time to transition. And so I have found if I can end meetings with 5 or 10 minutes even between calls so that I can consciously do some things, whether it's physical, like stretching or moving around, or if it's just even self-talk and checking in with myself to try to change my attitude. But it's that transition from that high point back to a place of greater calm that when I'm in the midst of a busy day, I don't have the time to even think about it, let alone employ those strategies. And I've heard you share some excellent strategies about how to do that. But if I don't take the time to do it, there's no value there.
I know what you mean, like those back-to-back calls that we do to ourselves oftentimes are exhausting. Like to me, doing 11 of those in one day, I am wiped out at the end. So I love your idea of let's space them out. Let's give ourselves some time to kind of get off of that high horse, bring ourselves down and collect ourselves, get ourselves fully prepared to be there for that next person, that next call.
Yeah.
So what I hear you all saying is, society's telling me, you know, I need to be a machine. I need to be working full speed all day long. Getting through my to-do list means I'm a good person doing a good job. My actual physical system is responding to stress by revving me up into this fight and flight mode where I'm not that present, right? I'm just in this running, like scattered, nervous, not able to really be present and calm. So it's this, I'm just seeing and feeling the speed at which we're going, right? And thinking that we're somehow going to do it fast enough to do it good enough, to be good enough. And so Janice, talk a little bit more about ways, you had some great examples there, Wes, but ways to take those moments, like the rhythms and the seasons that Wes was talking about, to bring ourselves down from that so that we can be present to ourselves and all the creativity and wisdom we have, but also those we're working with.
Yeah, let me share a great tool that we use in positive intelligence. And there's a couple of ways that you can use it. One is to, whenever you're feeling really negative, like let's say, you know, you just beat yourself up over the call you had with a donor. Or you can also use this to simply become more present. So let's try this. Let's close our eyes, if you would. And I'd like you to take one fingertip and rub it against another fingertip and pay great detail to what you're sensing in that fingertip. And maybe you can feel the ridges. Maybe there's a little bit of dry skin on the tip of your fingertip. Just bring all of your attention to that fingertip right now and wash everything that's going on around you or any other sensations that you're picking up on. Just kind of push them aside for a moment. Now I'd like you to take the hand, one hand, and rub it against another, the other hand. You only have two, right? So take them and take your fingertips and start moving them slowly down one hand, all the way down the fingers into the palms, and notice what you're feeling. Notice maybe any calluses that you might have there, any rough skin. Feel the sensations. What does that feel like? And then move your fingertips right into the center of your hand and maybe move the fingers of the other hand around a little bit. And you can open your eyes now, but this is a great way that you can spend 2 minutes and shift yourself from this negative, unpresent place into the present moment.
So why is that work? Because even just doing it now while you're talking was helping me. What's that about, really quickly?
It's really bringing ourselves out of our head into our body. Whenever we can connect with our body and bring our full attention to it, it can settle us. You can do it with your breath. It's just sit there, put your hand on your stomach and pay attention to the rise and the fall of your stomach as you're breathing in and you're breathing out. And for these types of exercises, they're great for getting you present and in the right place, let's say before a donor call or before a presentation. And I encourage people at a minimum to do these for 2 minutes. Sometimes when you get really good at it, it takes 20 seconds. But for those high tense, anxiety of invoking calls or presentations, or discussions with somebody that you've been putting off, spend 10, 12 minutes doing it. And you're going to find you're going to be in a much better place to be fully there and engaged for a positive conversation.
Yeah. Karen, I have a practice that has been really helpful to me over the years where I write a little paragraph about how I want to show up that day or for this appointment. And, you know, I change it over time, but if I just rehearse that, I feel like it kind of brings me back. Do you want me to share you an example with you?
Yes, that'd be great. Great.
It might sound something like this. Others experience me as someone who genuinely cares about them, as someone who makes them feel calm and valued. They enjoy the questions that I ask as it gives them opportunity to talk about things that matter to them. And they know that I won't judge them, but that I'll recognize the beauty in them and their actions. And later in the day, they'll look back on our conversation and see it as one of the bright spots in their day. And they'll look forward to the next time we speak.
So, wow.
You know,
I love that.
it can almost sound a little ego-driven, but the truth is, it's easy for me to be intimidated by another call and by feeling like I have to be everything and say everything right. And this kind of sets me free from those expectations. And it just says, I'm going to show up this way and I'm going to repeat that to myself. And it's easier for me to move there and just hold that position if I read that to myself.
How different that conversation will be when you're coming from that versus I've got to figure out how to get this donor to give me $20,000.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about what he wrote before we got on this podcast. I bet you it was very similar.
Well, interesting. There's another little different practice about 3 minutes down the street from our house is a small park with a pond and there's trees around it. And so I do have a practice. I'll take that 3 minutes. I'll walk down there. I'll stand at the end of the pond and I'll look at this beautiful, calm scene. And I'll imagine that I'm taking that back with me and it's in front of me while I sit here in front of my computer or video or whatever it is. It's another way of just helping me go there. It's not my nature.
Fantastic. I have a quick question about the boundary. So folks were interested in looking at that as well. So talk about how boundaries relate to all that we've been discussing so far, starting with you, Janice.
Well, yeah, boundaries is an interesting one because they're kind of bi-directional, right? We can either allow other people to not have boundaries with us, or we can really overstep our boundaries with other people, right? So, you know, it's really hard to be present when you're stressed out, burnt out, because you haven't set good boundaries. So when we're not able to set good boundaries, sometimes there's a lot of different reasons for it, but oftentimes it's social conditioning. Our identities can be so tied up with what we're doing for people. And this is especially true for women who have, you know, been in these positions for years in the work of nurturing and tending to people's emotions. And it's sort of expected and demanded of us. And because we're giving away our attention and we're giving away of ourselves and we're giving away our energy to so many people and to so many things, we're in overload. So we almost have our own selves to blame for it. And then we oftentimes deal with the shame in setting boundaries, like Brené Brown always talks about. And we're afraid that we're going to be shamed for letting people down. And that might be true. Sometimes we might have to let people down, but we have to also consider how can we continue to be that machine that Wes has talked about? How can we continue to drive ourselves and what's the impact on other people? Not only just ourselves, but the ones that we love, the ones that we want to be there for, that we want to be present for. So that whole business of doing really keeps us from being.
Yeah.
And that's causing a lot of that burnout.
Yeah. And I like your reference to Brené Brown. She's really got some great material on that. And I don't have any trouble setting boundaries. It's keeping them. gives me the challenge. I know what I should do. And I know that I have to protect my capacity, not just for today, but for tomorrow and next year and the next decade. That's my intention. I want to keep giving the gift that I can give to the people I love, or the clients or donors. And in order to do that, I know in my head that I need to really put self-care as a priority, if not the priority. My challenge is really my self-perception. It's very easy for me to see, to translate what I do as being my value. This, I'm only as valuable as what I do for others or what I get done. And so I have to keep pushing back to a connection with the self-compassion, but the idea that I don't want to get a lot done. I want to make an impact. I want to do things well, and to be willing to accept that trade-off and do fewer things but have a greater impact is just a constant choice. And I realize that that's tied to boundaries. And so the attractiveness of a life that is a life of impact, that is a life that's made a difference in the world, is more powerful than just me wanting to take care, I need to take care of myself. It's feeling like I'm saying yes to something, a deeper yes inside of me about the gift I want to give and the quality of that gift and the length of that gift. That attracts me, as opposed to just willing to say, well, what am I not going to do and who am I going to say no to?
Yeah, you know, and as you were saying that, you know, it just occurred to me that for those of us that work in nonprofits, we do want to make a change in the world, right? That's what we're here for. And yet, if we don't put, as the airlines say, don't put our oxygen mask on first, we can't really be there and do and change and have the impact that we really are in our jobs for, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you all. Beautiful. Very, very, that's just such a helpful piece there. Thank you so much, Wes. Well, this has been such an uplifting conversation and eye-opening. And before we wrap things up, I'd love to have each of you share one thing that you'd like to leave our listeners with. We think about COVID, Black Lives Matter, political things, environmental things. People have been through a lot in the last few years. And so share, what is one thing you want to leave people with from this, in this podcast? Starting with you, Janice.
Oh, I always have to go first. You know, I think we get to control our thoughts. We don't get to control a lot in this world, but we get to control our thoughts. We get to control how we respond to certain things. And we can control our thoughts in a way that everything doesn't feel so overwhelming, and that we don't get burnt out as a result of that, by, you know, really finding a practice of slowing ourselves down, getting into our body, paying attention, using techniques, whether it's meditation or something else. Maybe it's even just walking in nature. We owe that to ourselves, and we owe it to the organizations that we're working for and the families that love us. We owe it to take care of ourselves.
I love that. I'll build on what you're saying, Janice, because that's such good advice. I think if we allow ourselves just to relax into the natural rhythms of the created universe that we are a part of, that has times of rest and times of growth and times of energy and times where we're pulling back. And if we just accept that as a part of who we are and embrace it and recognize that by connecting ourselves with all the natural world that is around us, human beings that we are part of allows us to accept ourselves and to give ourselves that opportunity to rest when we need to rest and to take in nourishment when we need to do that, both emotionally and mentally, as well as physically. And then to frame that as, this is the gift that I'm creating to give to others. It's not just the function that I'm filling. It's the fact that I am working hard on who I am and how I am so that I can give that as an ever more beautiful gift to the world and to those that are around me. I think that mindset can inspire us to apply some of these good things that we know we should be doing.
Thank you both so much for sharing your wisdom and insight with us today. If you want to connect with Janice or Wes, be sure to check out the episode notes. And if you're interested in learning more about self-care and boundaries, you can head to veritasgroup.com/webinars and find an on-demand webinar that Wes and I did together and is all about how to create healthy boundaries. Thank you and take care.
Thank you for joining us for the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group. Richard and Jeff also write an ongoing blog that you can subscribe to for free at veritasgroup.com. Please join us again next time.